Today, I thought I would go over the things that we've been studying all year, the first seven of the 10 most excellent practices, and just review the highlights of each one, so that we can see that they actually are, there's a context for them. They're not just individual things that we get caught up into for a month and then forget about. So that's what I was going to do today. And most of you have been here for many of the talks, right? But have you been here at any of them? Maybe not. Do you do Facebook?
Yeah.
You can download them all from the Drop Into Mindfulness group page if you're interested, which of course you will be after I finish. So we've been studying... Just the highlights, yeah, then you won't need to read it. We've been studying what is often called the 10 perfections, but we're calling the 10 most excellent practices for getting to the other shore, because they are practices that are helpful for this path and for working towards freedom from suffering, which is rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion. The traditional words are aversion, grasping, ignorance, the root of suffering. And the other shore is freedom from that. So these are 10 things that you can do that will help with your practice. And they are not required, but they're really helpful. So the first one is generosity. And we spent 2 weeks on that we spent a retreat and a week on that. Generosity is always the first on the list, regardless of which sort of school or tradition you're looking at. They have various lists of these perfections, but generosity is always first.
Does it have a meaning that it's first?
Yes, so it's foundational.
That's foundational.
The image that I used was, it's the table on which we're building the puzzle of our practice. It's not just a piece of the puzzle. It's the foundation for it. It's essential. And it's said that if the Buddha found someone who didn't understand the benefit of generosity, he wouldn't teach them anything. Mm-hmm. Not that they had to be generous, but that they had to understand that generosity was essential. And the reason it's so essential is because it is the antithesis of what causes suffering. So giving is the antithesis of grasping or clinging, and receiving is the antithesis of aversion. So where there's generosity, there can't be grasping and aversion. And of course, becoming more and more free of this decreases the greed, hatred, ignorance. You get more clarity, and so the third factor of suffering also is reduced. Generosity, the practice of generosity, is essential. And I mentioned something then which comes up over and over again, which is there is the internal mind state of feeling generous, which will lead to generous action. And then there's an external action, which you can choose to do even if you don't feel the internal mind state. And the two feed each other. So if you choose to act generously, it will develop the internal generosity, which will then lead to more acts of generosity, which will then lead to more generous of a being. So it's this cycle, and the one way it's a practice is that we're learning how to be generous by doing it even when we're not feeling it. That's the first. Generosity, act generous, become generous, and thereby don't be aversive or grasping. The second was decency, which decency of essence, character, habit, and behavior. So it's sort of a broad everything included. Decency being a word that I prefer to the traditional virtue, or what's the other one, John?
Morality.
Because both of those words tend to have a lot of baggage, especially in a Christian-based society. But decency, we all sort of know what decency is when we see it. And I quoted Aristotle, who I thought had the best definition of everything I was studying that month. Aristotle says that it's about developing one's character by cultivation of wholesome inclinations and dispositions which conduce to the goal of human flourishing. So there's nothing in there about good or bad or right or wrong. It's all about the ultimate goal is human flourishing. And we are developing inclinations that will tend to lead to that. The more traditional Buddhist definition is being naturally inclined toward relieving suffering and increasing benefit. Now, again, this is not something that is always there within us, but we can choose to act decently, and our acts of kindness and non-harming will help to cultivate the internal state, which will result in more acts of decency, which cultivate the internal state. So you've got this cyclical process going. And I believe I gave an exercise then. Oh, the exercise for generosity was the benefaction bucks, where everyone was asked to give a dollar away and to pay attention to the feelings and conversations inside about why you're choosing to give it here and who you're giving it to. The exercise for decency, in addition to contemplating it, which is always the exercise, one possibility was to choose a characteristic or a character that you wish you were like and then just act like that. The example being my friend who acted like a knight of the round table because he wanted to be more chivalrous and eventually got a reputation for it, and it also started coming naturally. So an example of the action developing the mind state and then the mind state resulting in the action. So we had act generous to become generous, and then we have act decent to become decent. The third practice is renunciation. And the main point of this is that we are renouncing suffering. We're not renouncing things or pleasures. Remembering that suffering is caused by grasping and aversion. What we are called to renounce is grasping and aversion. And I gave the example of you're eating your favorite food, or you're trying not to eat your favorite food and it's hard to resist, but if someone tells you that food is infected with salmonella, then suddenly you don't want to eat it, right? Because you really know, it's not just intellectual, but you know this is not going to be good to eat. So in the same way, if we can observe and learn and experience what causes our suffering, it becomes a relatively easy thing to give up those aversions and clinging. Problem is that that's a really easy thing to say, and it's not really easy to do because it's not really clear where that lies. And you have to really experience it and know it to be able to give it up. Otherwise, it's just asceticism that's going to wear you down. So one of the things you can do is give something up intentionally. It might look to other people like asceticism, but you're giving something up for a period of time in order to observe how that affects you. And then the grasping for it becomes more clear, and you start to see where the suffering is. So the main point of the main highlight of the renunciation practice is renouncing suffering and not beating ourselves up and trying to renounce chocolate. Chocolate's not the problem. It's the inability to resist it that's the problem. And so again, we have an intentional action leads to understanding, and that understanding will lead to a spontaneous renunciation, and again feeds itself. So the same cycle. So this one we've had: act generous in order to be generous, act decent in order to be decent, refrain in order to learn, in order to refrain. And then number four is wisdom, which is a little bit different than choosing to do things. Wisdom is a specific thing in this context. We talk about mindfulness meditation as learning to see things as they really are. Wisdom is that which you see when you see things as they really are. So we're trying to see and know for ourselves experientially that aversion and grasping and ignorance result in suffering. And as we start to see that and understand it and know it in our gut and believe it, then that's wisdom. It's changing from knowledge or faith that, you know, I know technically that my grasping on the chocolate is a problem, but I haven't really seen it clearly. And so when I start to actually see it and get it and know it and have that sort of grokking moment, that's wisdom beginning to arise. So the practice of wisdom, wisdom is knowledge of that truth of suffering and freedom from suffering. And I'm using knowledge here, not intellectual knowledge, but sort of cellular knowledge. The practice of wisdom involves doing things which will result in that. And one of the things that is suggested is learning about whatever your path is. You know, reading scriptures or treatises or listening to podcasts or whatever. And I encouraged some study. And there are a couple other areas also that are traditionally part of wisdom, but that's what I was focusing on. So wisdom is not doing something, but knowing something, and the process that conduces to knowing something. Then we get diligence. This was another one that we spent a couple of talks on. And I talked about the process whereby you have energy. If you expend energy, that's effort. Effort is the expending of energy. If you put your effort in the right place, expend energy appropriately, that's diligence. And diligence is characterized by being balanced, sustained, and committed. One of the things I wanted to make very clear was balanced and committed. You can probably understand what that means. But by sustained effort, it's not sustained effort like you're constantly striving, but it's sustained appropriate application of the effort. So it's a continual awareness and reassessment of where are you putting your energy, what's appropriate for you. Sometimes appropriate effort is to do nothing and to rest. And diligence or effort applied appropriately will tend to be fulfilling, even if it's not always pleasant. If you are burning yourself out, that's a sign that your effort is not appropriate in that instance. And we talked about starting with physical, mental, and emotional health, because it's the same energy that you use to bop around in the world as you use to be mindful in the world. There's no spiritual energy that you have to sort of make that's separate. So the first stop in considering diligence is, you know, how's your body? Are you taking care of it as well as you're able to? Are you mentally and emotionally as healthy as you're able to be in whatever your situation is at any particular time? And being aware of the size of your gas tank. I used an example of flying to Ireland from England, and two planes, a group of friends. One of them had long-range tanks, and the one I was going to fly had regular tanks. And it didn't matter how much I wished that I had long-range tanks, I still had to stop in Aberystwyth to fill up, or else I was going to crash in the sea. So we tend to look at each other and think, well, you know, look at everything they're doing. I ought to be able to do that. But if your gas tank is smaller, then that would not be appropriate use of your energy to try and do more than what you're able to do. So that's sort of highlights of energy. And I've given this a subtitle, Putting Effort in Wisely. Using your effort wisely in order to deepen your wisdom, in order to see things as they are, in order to reach the other shore. Then we had waiting, which is one small piece of patience. The practice of patience is big, and I didn't talk about most of it, but I talked about this one specific element, which is waiting in the face of unpleasantness. And that being the patience of not having to respond or react instantly. And I gave the example of almost losing it with my mother last time I was visiting. But I was driving and I had to pay attention, and I wasn't able to actually say what had come into my mind. And 10 seconds later, when it was safe again, I didn't feel the need to say it. So I am cultivating a habit of pausing before I respond, which maybe doesn't sound really spiritual, but what you're doing is you're cultivating a habit, if we go back to decency, that becomes an act that happens when you're not being mindful or you're not feeling kind, but the habit is there, and that causes your action to not be unkind, to be decent. And so then you've affected a decent response, and that will cultivate internal decency. So I guess really I was using waiting as an example of one way you might put this process into use. And then most recently we talked about fully trueness, which was a little confusing, but I'm going to make it very simple. Fully trueness is manifesting in thought, word, and deed from wisdom, from a basis of wisdom. Wisdom being that knowledge of what you see when you see things as they really are. So you have the understanding, and you're deepening the understanding, and when we get to fully trueness, we're living out of that understanding. So it's abiding in wisdom as opposed to just understanding the truth that is wisdom. So I've called this one Abide in Wisdom, or Be Free. And so here's a nice little diagram that I don't expect you to see, but I'm going to try and explain it. Because what we end up with, and we still have three more to go, three more practices, but even in these seven, we have cycles within cycles. And the whole thing is a complex context, and you can't really take any out individually. So you start with generosity, decency, and renunciation. And that is essentially acting like the people who have seen things as they really are, or the nobles, as they were traditionally called, those who know what we're trying to know. So we start off acting like wise people, which will cultivate that behavior, but we do it consciously. And through that, we start understanding wisdom little by little. We start seeing things as they are. We then use diligence and patience. Because we've seen it, we're now motivated, and we can apply diligence and patience to continuing to do the generosity and the decency and the renunciation, and continue to develop that into something that's more natural to us, which creates more wisdom, which motivates more diligence and patience. And as that wisdom grows, then we start being able to abide in it. At first, we just see it in little moments, and we start to understand it, but we're not experiencing it a lot. We're not manifesting out of it, but as those experiences increase, we start being able to actually live from that wisdom and understand it better. And then, of course, that makes the generosity and decency and renunciation deeper and more fulfilling, and we learn more wisdom, and etc., etc. So I wanted to review all of that and to point out all these connections, because I was beginning to feel like myself that I was separating out these individual practices and sort of forgetting about what we talked about before. But in fact, they all work together. And it's good to look at them each individually so that we can understand them. But in the end, we want to see them as a whole, single thing, different aspects and different steps along the way, along the spiral network that we take to get to the other shore. So that's that. In next week, we'll have discussion, because it'll be the first Thursday of the month. And the second Thursday, I'll be talking about standing firm, which is the eighth of these practices. And I'll go into more depth on the retreat, which will be the following weekend. And so now you have some context for what's coming next.